Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 16, Number 2. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was PSN Number 36, Superfoods. In nature, there are certain foods that really stand out for their positive effects on human health and nutrition. Good examples include raw almonds, papaya, kale, garlic, bee pollen, propolis, and honey. Bee pollen contains up to 30% protein. It's an excellent source of clean energy and has proven antimicrobial effects. Propolis is a wonderful remedy for colds, infection, sports injury, tissue repair, gangrene, gum disease, bronchitis, strep throat, herpes, and sore throat. Raw natural honey is another big favorite. I love honey and add a heaping tablespoon to my post-workout shake to help with glycogen replenishment. The evidence shows that you can replete glycogen faster if you put honey in your post-workout shake. Of course, raw honey is antiseptic, antibiotic, antifungal, and antibacterial. It's good stuff. The right honey is from nature in the form of a honeycomb. That's probably the best. You just get a chunk of honeycomb and eat it. And remember that raw honey is the only natural food in the world that can't spoil. So if you eat some of that stuff, it'll keep you going longer than you can imagine. Maybe even as long as those mummies in the pyramids. That's where they found that honey, in jars. And it had no mold on it, and it was still edible. It was like 4,000 years old. That's pretty incredible. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is insulin, the anabolic hormone. Produced by specialized endocrine cells of the pancreas called the islets of Langerhans, insulin was discovered in 1921 by two Canadian researchers, Dr. Frederick Banting and his medical assistant Charles Best. Insulin consists of 31 amino acids, arranged in two polypeptide chains, and is released by the beta cells of the islets of Langerhans. The average human pancreas stores about 200 units of insulin and secretes between 25 to 30 units daily into the circulation. When plasma glucose or blood sugar rises after eating carbohydrates, insulin release is stimulated. As plasma glucose falls, insulin secretion is reduced. Now, during periods of prolonged fasting, the insulin levels in a normal, healthy person stabilize. Insulin prevents sugar from rising too high, and its antagonist hormone, glucagon, prevents blood sugar from falling too low. This team effort of regulation, response, and compensation to the internal environment dictated by messages in the blood helps ensure glucose homeostasis and the regulation of nutrient metabolism and storage. Insulin is crucial to the transport of glucose and amino acids into muscle cells. Properly managed by the right diet, insulin is the athlete's best friend because it's a major player in muscle hypertrophy. With the support of human growth hormone, it has a direct effect on the production of somatomedins, IGF-1 in particular, in the liver. For these reasons, insulin has earned the reputation of an anabolic hormone. However, insulin is a two-edged sword. It is also the hormone of feasting and plenty, and depending on what is eaten and when, insulin can also function as a brilliant fat storage hormone. When glycogen is oxidized and depleted through physical activity and exercise, skeletal muscle continues to depend on insulin for glucose delivery and transport. During intense exercise, the body can take in up to 30 times more glucose independent of insulin. In the recovery stage after exercise, insulin assists in the conversion of post-workout carbs to glycogen for muscle glycogen replenishment. So to recover, we need insulin. Insulin is also instrumental to the process of protein delivery, as amino acids needed for muscle growth and repair require insulin for entry into muscle cells. Most amino acids and creatine enter muscle cells via a process called the sodium pump. Insulin speeds the action of this pump. Insulin binds to specific receptors on the surface of the muscle cell membrane and facilitates the entry of important fuel molecules needed to sustain heavy workouts. Although insulin responds directly to ingested sugars derived from a variety of natural and refined carbohydrates, amino acids also stimulate its release, although to a much lesser degree. Arginine and lysine have the greatest insulinogenic effect, it's called, followed by leucine, phenylalanine, valine, and methionine. Ingested fats have virtually no effect on insulin, although insulin has a great effect on them. Our ability to respond to insulin is called insulin tolerance. The more tolerance a person has for insulin, the more insulin it takes to get a response. A low tolerance to insulin is what we want. This is preferable because an excessive insulin production is associated with obesity, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, hypertension, vascular disease, fatigue, and type 2 diabetes. Many overweight individuals have excess insulin in their blood due to excessive stimulation of the pancreas. The hallmark of Syndrome X is resistance to insulin, which the authors of Syndrome X, the Complete Nutritional Program to Prevent and Reverse Insulin Resistance, claim is caused by eating too many processed high-carbohydrate foods such as breads, pastas, and sweets that create an excess of glucose and cell-destroying free radicals. Yes, consuming sugar leads to the production of billions of free radicals. Syndrome X, coined in 1988 by Stanford endocrinologist Dr. Gerald Reven, is defined by a cluster of related symptoms that always includes insulin resistance and one or more of the following conditions: abnormal blood fats such as high triglycerides or high cholesterol, elevated uric acid, reduced HDL, increased oxidized LDL particles, overweight, overfat, and high blood pressure. Insulin resistance, we all need to understand this. This involves the release by the pancreas of more insulin than the target cells in the body can handle. It's an overproduction of insulin because the cell receptors are intolerant, so more are produced. Excess carbohydrate intake in the form of sugar, bread, pasta, bagels, chips, cookies, breakfast cereals, all these foods cause enormous rises in blood glucose. It elevates quickly, and in response, the pancreas releases more and more insulin. Eventually, the cell receptors of muscle and vital organs become saturated, non-responsive, and may even shut down. Then, glucose and insulin begin to accumulate to toxic levels in the bloodstream, becoming agents of hostility. Clotting factors are activated, and advanced glycation end products, or AGEs, begin to form. As many as 25 to 30% of North American adults have Syndrome X. I mean, it's very common. It's prolific. You just almost assume it when you see people with the right symptoms. Lack of sleep depresses growth hormone release, slows muscle and strength gains, and negatively influences the immune function. Insomnia and sleep deprivation also cause insulin resistance that promotes intra-abdominal obesity. So this is seldom mentioned, that sleep deprivation increases insulin resistance. This translates to that spare tire that we get around the gut. And this is the most dangerous area where fat can collect, because this is where our risk of heart disease, especially in men and in women, starts to skyrocket. So, you know, most people don't have a lot of excess fat around their wrists. It's usually around their gut. And guess where the food, the intestines, and all that gunk goes down inside. So it makes sense that there's a buildup around that area. Ideally, we don't want to constantly flood the body with high glycemic, low fiber, low water volume carbs such as sucrose or white flour, as this causes insulin to spike. It's much wiser to consume carbohydrates that are metabolized slowly and that release their sugars slowly. This keeps glucose and insulin closer to a normal fasting baseline for a good anabolic effect, not too high or too low. Insulin suppression reduces testosterone levels, impairs strength, and limits performance, whereas high levels increase risk of disease and obesity. So once again, we're reminded by the Greeks that it's the middle path where health is discovered, maintained and enjoyed. Nutrients that optimize insulin activity, improve its sensitivity, and protect it and the pancreas from oxidative damage include vitamin B6, magnesium, chromium, vanadium, alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin C, and the omega-3 fatty acid family, including the parent alpha-linolenic acid, and its children, or its offspring, eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, and docosahexaenoic acid, DHA. Now, insulin has a direct effect on the metabolism and storage of fat, so fat is in this game too. For instance, insulin accelerates the transport of glucose from the blood into cells and the conversion of glucose into fatty acids through a process known as lipogenesis, the creation of fat. Insulin has a much greater half-life than glucose, so any insulin left roaming around in the blood after it has completed its work is also converted into fat. And the effect is even more reliable if by genetic predisposition you have a slow metabolic rate, say you're an endomorph or a CAFO like me, and spend most of your free time or work time seated. Yes, I am in front of a computer for probably 8 hours a day. That is why I walk to the gym. That is why I walk to shopping. That is why I work out. That is why I try and find a way to be as active as much as possible, and why I stand up every hour and throw darts just to break it up. You know, I've got a dartboard in my office just to break it up, or I stand up and go get a glass of water just to break it up. That's very important. Now, if levels of insulin climb too high, which can happen simply by eating a large meal or a meal dominated by carbs such as bread, rice, or pasta, a simultaneous increase in the enzymes lipoprotein lipase and acetyl-CoA carboxylase occurs. Both of these enzymes facilitate the transport of fatty acids into fat cells. High insulin levels activate lipoprotein lipase and increase its activity. That's very important to understand. Lipoprotein lipase promotes the removal of triglycerides from the blood and encourages their deposition into adipocytes, which are fat cells. Insulin also inhibits the action of hormone-sensitive lipase, another enzyme, which breaks down stored fats for use as energy. So it activates the production, manufacture, and deposition of fat into cells, and then it prevents the body from using fat as a fuel source. So anytime you catch yourself eyeing a muffin or a slice of bread, and you don't deserve it, you haven't earned it, you don't need those carbs, focus in advance on what effect your indulgence will have on your blood chemistry. Remember, insulin inhibits the mobilization of stored fat. Pinch an inch. Pinch your body next time you're thinking about indulging. If insulin levels are continuously sustained above baseline throughout the day, enzymes like lipoprotein lipase can suppress the oxidation of fatty acids even while, and get this, consuming a negative calorie intake combined with exercise. So you've got a negative calorie intake, you're consuming less calories than you're burning and need. You're working out and you're still not losing fat. This is called an anti-lipolytic effect. The chemistry of the body is interfering with what you want as your objective. While the caloric profile of food is a factor in weight management, the chemistry, I keep pounding this message through the course material, the chemistry of food is much more powerful and important to understand. The calorie paradigm has now been replaced with a much better construct. I just love this. Think of food as a stream of digitized energy that flows like electricity, magnetized by nature, into our body after it is filtered by our immune system. This exogenous data, because that's what it is, it's outside information, then stimulates trillions of cell signals inside our body that ultimately initiate or inhibit gene expression. The initiation or inhibition is based on what the food is. Is it good or bad? Is it essential or non-essential? Chronic insulin elevation occurs as a result of consuming a diet high in refined carbohydrates. Now, we know this for sure. And this happens regardless of whether we expend energy or not. But many people do not lack the exercise component, and they still don't get the results they want. In other words, they're training, they're working out, they're not getting the results. Now, why is that? That's because they don't get the nutrition connection. They're not following the science. Muscle contraction is the essence behind all movement. Okay, we understand that, and muscles require energy. So where's the energy coming from? High levels of insulin are brought down by forcing the body to consume blood glucose as a fuel. As glucose levels decrease, insulin levels decrease. However, the diet must be right, or you'll continue to fail. In other words, if you're training and running and swimming and pumping and you're not getting the results, look at the diet. This is what bodybuilders have done for 100 years plus. Look at the diet and understand how to manage your body composition with food. Because to turn things around, you have to train correctly. That's a given. And the big A-N-D, and improve the quality of the carbs you ingest and the food that you consume. Eat things like leafy greens, raw veggies, fresh berries, and yams. We must learn how to modify our overall daily intake of food. We have to know when to eat them and when to reduce them. And now we've got this whole new discovery about in chronobiology about how food affects the circadian clocks in our organs and in our brain. So if you eat the best stuff at the wrong time, you can still get into trouble. When is now becoming as important as what? Eventually, we have to think in terms of glycemic index, carbohydrate density, fiber content, water volume, and the pH of food. This is logic, and this is really important as a means of thought when it's applied to food. Now, raising protein and essential fatty acids intake to optimum levels is also important, not just reducing your intake of refined carbs, but we also need all the other essential amino acids and fatty acids, because protein is the anchor that provides stability to every meal. As insulin levels fall to normal or ideal levels, the release of fatty acids accelerates and stored body fat declines. Excessive body fat and inactivity coupled with aging and stress leads to a reduction in the number of insulin receptors on muscle cells. With less protein receptors available, you get less response per unit of insulin. Exercise and good nutrition optimize cell receptor activity so that less insulin is required to meet the challenge of energy metabolism. Although most meals, as a rule, should consist of protein mixed with slow-burning, low to medium glycemic, fibrous whole carbs, consuming high glycemic carbohydrates with whey peptides and creatine in liquid form can be extremely beneficial immediately after a workout if getting lean and muscular is important to you. During this 1 to 2 hour time period, right after training, this is called the athlete's window of opportunity, a glycogen-storing enzyme called glycogen synthetase peaks and works synergistically with insulin to shuttle glucose and amino acids into muscle cells. Testosterone and growth hormone are also very responsive. If you drink your meal, due to the connection with insulin and the formation of IGFs, insulin promotes anabolic activity and anti-catabolic sequences by stimulating protein synthesis if the demand's been created, decreasing proteolysis, the breakdown of amino acids, and enhancing nitrogen retention. All these things are essential for growth and repair and recovery. After exercise, muscle glycogen levels are typically low and require replenishment. So a post-workout shake is the perfect solution because it's fast-acting and can be modified to suit individual biochemical requirements and objectives. Now, missing this window can drastically affect recovery and growth responses. And this is a common area of negligence. Hitting the window consistently leads to more efficient recovery, more muscle and less body fat. This is why I always have an excellent post-workout shake designed to replate for recovery. I've got to get back to where I was and then let the body grow a little bit further ahead of that. Otherwise, I'm going to go nowhere fast. Glycogen-depleted muscles are very receptive to nutrients needed for repair and nourishment, including amino acids, antioxidants, omega-3 fats, and creatine. The best time to supply the body with protein and carbs in specific ratios designed to enhance performance is when the demand is high, and the best way to administer these nutrients is in the form of a blended protein shake. A liquid meal spends very little time in the stomach because it's already reduced to a liquid form. It slides down with little opposition and is ready for absorption in as little as 20 minutes or less. Solid food, and especially tissue proteins like turkey breast or tuna, require several hours of soaking and digestive time in the stomach. By the time solid food has been converted to chyme — chyme is a semi-fluid mass of partly digested food that passes from the stomach into the duodenum. Okay, by the time this happens and it's ready for absorption into the blood, the post-window advantage is gone. Your athlete's window is closed. So in contrast, the molecular weight of whey peptides in solution, consisting primarily of a di- and tripeptide matrix, is much, much lower. So this is the advantage of a shake compared to solid tissue protein. Approximately 1 gram per kilogram of body weight of high glycemic carbs, 0.5 grams per kilogram of whey protein isolate, up to 25% of your daily protein requirements, and 2 to 6 grams of creatine monohydrate is best to consume as a post-workout liquid meal. Amounts obviously vary on gender, form of exercise. It all depends on the variables: volume of exercise, intensity of exercise, and your existing body composition. You've got to keep your individuality in mind. A post-workout insulin boost also helps to mitigate the effects of cortisol, which is catabolic and wreaks havoc on our immune cells. Cortisol elevation in response to intense training opposes new tissue remodeling and accelerates protein degradation for up to 64 hours post-exercise. Carbing up after a workout is a time-honored tradition among athletes. It's not for everyone. It still remains a process or a method of value for many people, though. Increased carb intake raises insulin, which acts as a cortisol antagonist. When insulin levels are high, cortisol levels tend to descend and remain low. At other times, however, such as in the evening or on off days away from the gym, excess carbohydrate consumption, especially refined carbs, can be easily converted to fat, and a rebound effect causing blood sugar levels to drop will occur. As insulin levels increase in response to any high sugar load, such as pie, ice cream, cake, a sugar-laden soda, blood glucose levels begin to fall and crash. If blood sugar falls below a critical level, mental concentration is affected, emotions are affected, and fatigue sets in. The desire for more sugar can be overwhelming if you give in, and then the cycle just continues to repeat itself ad infinitum. Soon you fall into a chronic catabolic state and begin losing muscle — that's sarcopenia — and lean mass, and set yourself up for obesity. So you can see it's a process that starts backward in time and brings us to the present state that we're in. Insulin is a critical variant in health management and is one of the few hormones in our body that responds directly to the consumption of food. Master your food, and you can control what your body does with it. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from English comedian and actor Jasper Karat. "Laughter is the best medicine. Unless, of course, you're diabetic. Then insulin comes pretty high on the list."